following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News. Here are your hosts, Olivia Reiner and Tom Silverstein. Welcome, everyone, to the Packers News JS Online Green 19 podcast. Alongside Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood, I am Olivia Reiner. We are well into the week of Packers training camp. The Packers actually had their last public practice of training camp today, so pretty crazy that we are already so close to the start of the regular season. The Packers have been practicing for the past 2 days against the New York Jets. This is the first time the Packers have done joint practices since 2019 when the Houston Texans came to town. Gentlemen, what have your impressions been of training camp, joint sessions this time around, and some of the differences that you've noticed compared to 2019?
Well, before we go into that, I totally want to say, why can't they have practices open the week before the last preseason game? I don't understand that. That's been a long tradition. And to, you know, rob fans of that opportunity, I think is a big mistake on their part. So I'm just going to start out with that. But as for the joint practices, I'm sure it was good for both teams. I think it allows for a more competitive situation. Both teams get to face guys they haven't faced before. They get to try to use techniques on guys who aren't necessarily aware they're going to be using them. I think it works out okay as long as you don't have brawls. And, you know, like I think the Raiders, and I forgot who they're practicing with, ended theirs with a brawl. And what good is that? So, yeah, I thought it was all right.
Yeah, it was a little skirmish out there today, but nothing, no punches, nothing too significant. I was actually surprised even that happened because the difference between these practices and 2 years ago against the Texans is really the familiarity and the relationships on both coaching staffs. And I think that you really saw that play out on the field. You know, to your point, Tom, why can't they have next week open? The first thing that would come to mind is you start getting into regular season prep. You want to show your stuff publicly, but let's face it, they showed their stuff the last 2 days. That's a huge difference between this week and these joint practices and what they had against the Texans. Texans, everything was vanilla because there was relationships on the Texans staff and the Bears staff with the Paganos. I thought there was a lot more trust between the Packers and Jets staffs. And as a byproduct of that, both sides, they showed their stuff. It wasn't very vanilla. So I think that it was honestly a lot more fruitful than 2 years ago.
And as a product of that, yeah, the Packers are getting a little bit more out of these sessions. And Aaron Rodgers said so himself. He is notorious for not enjoying joint practices. He was pretty critical of the Packers joint practice sessions with the Houston Texans. Rodgers was pretty pleased with how joint practices were going, at least as of Wednesday. Things got a little bit more chippy on Thursday, but still nothing that got too out of hand like it did over with the Raiders and the Rams. So all in all, pretty good joint session so far. Anyone stand out to you over these last 2 days now that we've gotten to see a little bit more, something that's a little bit more unique compared to other training camp practices where it's Packers versus Packers?
There were some offensive guys I saw had pretty good days. You know, Valdez-Scantling, until he dropped that deep one, was having a pretty good couple days of practice. You know, Davante Adams kind of got on his groove a little bit, and on the second day, just sort of schooled a couple undrafted free agents. But I thought, and I tried to keep an eye on this, but I thought the offensive line did a pretty good job against what's a really good Jets defensive line. And, you know, I watched Elgton Jenkins a couple times, and I saw him put a guy on his back. You know, I didn't see a lot of guys just blasting through the offensive line. And I thought that was probably one of the better things that they did. And most importantly, they got a really good look for rookie Royce Newman, who's playing right guard. You know, he's coming in like a bunch of guys have come in like that. Josh, it goes back to Josh Sitton and Bakhtiari. You know, these guys come in their first year and some of them are just ready to play in the NFL. It's weird, but they don't get fazed by it. And so I think Royce Newman's going to end up being one of those kind of guys.
And I would just like to say, I'm not right often, but I predicted Royce Newman might have a shot way back this spring that you'd see two, maybe rookies in center, just one. Josh Myers obviously being the starting center. But I'll go to the other side of the line of scrimmage. Top of the roster, Jaire Alexander is playing the football better in this camp than I can remember him playing the football. And he's always had the speed and the coverage ability, but that's been the one kind of flaw in the whole arsenal, is that he hasn't played the football that much. And, you know, I can't help but think back to the NFC Championship game, having two picks against Tom Brady. He's not been a guy that has intercepted ball a lot in his career, but he has played the football as well as I can remember him playing the football in this camp. And he had another interception today, a sliding pick against Zach Wilson. It was very clear. I mean, the All-Pro has kind of taken the Jets rookie quarterback to school a little bit. Really good exposure for Zach Wilson to go up against a guy like Jaire Alexander. And after practice, Mike LaFleur and Corey Davis were both singing Jaire Alexander's praises as one of the best in the league. He certainly impressed. And I think that, staying at the same position, Eric Stokes, naturally, it's obvious, but Eric Stokes looked better not having to cover Davante Adams. You could tell the difference. It's kind of like swinging a bat with the weight on it and then taking the weight off and swinging the same bat. You know, it's the same movements, it's the same activity, but it's in a completely different thing when you're not covering Davante Adams. So look, the rookie, he has gotten schooled all camp against maybe the NFL's best receiver. I thought that he's looked better not having to go against the NFL's best receiver.
Davante Adams was highly complimentary of Eric Stokes today and even likened his mentality and ability to another very familiar Packers cornerback, Jaire Alexander, who we just talked about. So I think that is really high praise for someone like Davante Adams to be singing that and saying that of Eric Stokes. So, you know, Stokes has a really interesting opportunity ahead of him. Kevin King has not really been participating this week in many team periods. He has been participating in red zone periods with the Jets, but we haven't seen him in just the move the ball periods, that sort of thing, 2-minute drill. Scenarios that would have him running a great distance, right? We've only been seeing him in these kind of short yardage scenarios. So what does that imply for Eric Stokes? How easy is it going to be for him to earn this starting role and knock Kevin King down a peg?
Well, I think they're limiting Kevin King's running. I mean, like you said, just the red zone and the move of the ball, they're clearly limiting his running around the field. You know, I asked Matt LaFleur about that battle specifically this morning, and he said that's going to carry out through camp. I thought it was really interesting, though, that Matt LaFleur said that when Kevin King gets up at the line of scrimmage and challenges receivers, he's about as good as it gets in the league. That was what he said of Kevin King. And if you go back to last year, it's very clear Matt LaFleur wants to see less off coverage, and he specifically wants to see less off coverage from Kevin King. And it makes sense. Kevin King, he's got that leverage at the line of scrimmage with that length, the size that he has. And he's a guy that, you know, I don't know that he runs this anymore with all the lower body injuries that he's had, but he ran a 4.43 coming into the NFL draft. You know, he's got good speed for that size. So I thought it was really interesting that Matt LaFleur talked about specifically when he gets up in guys' faces and he challenges receivers at the line of scrimmage, he's a really good corner. It's going to be fascinating to see how the snap distribution goes between those two.
Well, we just found out what happens when you don't come up and play at the line of scrimmage, or you don't play aggressively, you get traded to the Giants. And that's
yeah.
what happened to Josh Jackson. He was having a good camp, but when it came to the lights coming on, he reverted back to playing scared. And you can't play like that. And it's clear Matt LaFleur is sending that message that he wants his guys to play press coverage when, you know, when the situation calls for it. I think Eric Stokes has made a lot of progress, but LaFleur is right. Kevin King has 4 years of experience and he's not a slouch. He just has had the injury problems. I think what they have to do is make sure that Stokes is ready for the time. I'm going to say for the time that Kevin King gets hurt, because he's going to get hurt. It's just a fact of life. But you want Kevin King to be your starter coming into the season. You know, when you're going to New Orleans for the first week and you know, you're going to be at San Francisco in a couple of weeks, you're facing some really good receivers that Eric Stokes might struggle. They're going to game plan against him. So I think, I know there's a lot of probably fans who want Eric Stokes to start, but it's really the ideal situation is he's getting all these reps and King will be ready. He's a pro. He'll be ready when the season starts.
Yeah. I feel like it's less of a, maybe I should probably shouldn't be talking for fans, but I think there is a resentment of Kevin King and his injury proneness, how injury prone he is. And wanting to see someone else who's more reliable in the position. But we'll see if King is healthy enough come week one. And
you know,
we'll
Olivia, I think there's also a resentment that he's not TJ Watt. I think a lot of it. I mean, the guy can't change his name to TJ Watt. And 4 years later, you know, if they had to do it again, nothing against Kevin King specifically, but clearly that's a decision that they would not make again. So I you know, Wisconsin fans or Packers fans mostly, I think there's a lot of resentment there too.
I think they would like him a lot more if he had played the ball or the coverage correctly at the end of the first half and hadn't grabbed the jersey on the last, you know, defensive play. I think they feel a lot better about him. There's just a lot of resentment from that too. And it wasn't his fault. The whole game wasn't his fault. There was so much other stuff that went on. He just had a bad game. And the play at the end of the half was as much LaFleur's fault as it was Kevin King's. So, you know, I guess the whole thing will play out and we'll see where Stokes is in week 16 or 17 when they're getting ready to go to the playoffs.
Ultimately, the past is in the past, and Kevin King is going to be looking forward to the future, to rewriting his legacy here in Green Bay so far. So, Ryan, we talked a little bit about your cornerbacks. I want to flip it back over to Tom and what you mentioned about Royce Newman. So we're going to get an opportunity to see a different starting offensive line combination against the Jets this upcoming weekend, different from the one that we saw against the Texans when we saw John Runyon Jr. at left guard and Lucas Patrick at right guard. I don't want to hand the role off to Newman right now, but how competitive is this competition right now between him and Newman along the on the right side of the offensive line?
Yeah, and well, you know, John Runyon's still in that race, and Ben Braden is in that race. I think as long as Royce Newman doesn't fall apart. And from what I saw in that first game, the way he moved and the way he's able to get out on, you know, at a second level, and he was impressive. So let's just assume that he's going to be on the team. Whether he's starting, we don't know for sure. But those other three guys are battling. And then, you know, don't write off Cole Van Lannen, you know, because they're going to think about his potential. I think he's a guy who, if he continues to get stronger, could be a decent player. They're playing him at left tackle, right tackle. I think I saw him at left guard, and he may have even played right guard today. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look at my notes. They're just looking for the best guys who can play the most positions. And they know what Lucas Patrick can do. So if it comes down to, you know, the other two guys and they're not performing, they'll probably go with Lucas Patrick just because they know him so well and he could play three positions.
Yeah, I think that the most interesting thing that I've seen this week on the offensive line is that it might be the second team, the second unit, what you've seen there with Lucas Patrick on Wednesday getting center snaps and Jake Hansen, the center, out at right guard where Lucas Patrick usually lines up. And then today you saw Ben Braden out at right tackle where he's been repping at guard a lot of time on the first team, not just all camp, since the spring, all off season. And now, today he's second team right guard. It's pretty clear they're trying to cultivate some versatile depth there with some guys that have been in this league. And it's almost like an audition with Royce Newman kind of ascending to that top guard spot. It's kind of an audition for those guys that, hey, you want to make the 53, the more you can do. You got to be able to fill multiple spots. Lucas Patrick, can you be a backup center? Ben Braden, can you kick out the right tackle? And they've gotten a good hard look there, both those guys, both those spots this week.
Yeah, well, you know, when Braden was heavy into the competition for guard, he wasn't playing anywhere else. He was playing left guard and right guard. And now all of a sudden someone else moves in, and now you got to know whether he can play multiple positions. You know, if he would have been the starting guard, they'd have been okay with him just being able to play guard. But if you're now all of a sudden you're a backup, they got to find out whether he can play multiple positions. And that'll be something to watch on Saturday, because he's going to play some tackle, I think. You know, based on that practice, it's the first time we've seen him at tackle. And I'm thinking he's going to get a lot of reps there, just like Runyon is getting reps at center. You know, they're trying to find out whether he can play all three interior positions. That's a huge bonus if he can.
The players that have had success on this offensive line, and for the most part, I think of Billy Turner and Ellen Jenkins. I mean, they weren't always tackles. They played a guard as well in the past. So it's a key trait that Adam Stenovich looks for in his offensive linemen, and we'll get to see some more moving around and some tinkering this weekend and likely the following weekend as well. We have gone all this time without talking about a single quarterback. Crazy. I can't believe it. I'm disappointed in ourselves. So let's correct that now and talk about who will be starting at quarterback this weekend. And it's not going to be most likely Jordan Love, as he's still recovering from a shoulder injury he sustained through his throwing arm against the Houston Texans. Matt LaFleur would not rule him out outright for Saturday. However, Love has not practiced all week. That's not to say that if he felt good enough that he could, he wouldn't be able to go. I still think he could if he was, but LaFleur did say it was looking pretty doubtful that Love would play on Saturday. So with that being said, it's going to be the Kurt Benkert show, and maybe we'll get to see a quarter of Jake Dolagala, who the Packers re-signed. What should we be looking for in Benkert as someone who may or may not even make, is a long shot to make the 53-man roster?
I think he can't turn the ball over like he did in the first game. No fumbled snaps, no interceptions. The guy can clearly throw the ball. He's got a really good arm. He can get out of the pocket. I think they want to see him stay in the pocket a little more, but he's got to have the start that he had and then finish that way. You know, he doesn't have to score on every single possession, but have a good start and have a good finish and don't throw interceptions in between. I think that's kind of what he needs to do to make, you know, right now he's a practice squad guy. And I think they would keep him around if rosters were tomorrow, they'd keep him around on the practice squad. If he plays pretty well in the next two games, then you got to think about keeping him on the 53. You just have to think about it. You have to see what other quarterback situations. I mean, there's some bad quarterbacks in the NFL. And, you know, I think you have to consider putting him on the 53.
Yeah, I mean, there's, if nothing else, he's clearly playing for a spot on a 53 somewhere in the league in these final two games against the Jets and the Bills. So it's a huge opportunity for him because he was not expecting. He was very clear at the start of camp that he knew the circumstances and that this was going to be the summer of love. And he was not expecting a lot of reps and a lot of snaps. And all of a sudden here, the second preseason game is his effectively. So it's a huge unexpected opportunity for him. That's, you know, it's always been Kirk Bankert's challenge. And he talked about this today to be able to straddle that line between making plays, being a playmaker and showcasing that arm and playing clean. And it's always been, yeah, you can do all these things. You got a lot of talent, but playing within yourself. And you kind of saw that in the opener where he came out slinging, looked really good, looked like a 53-man roster quarterback somewhere in this league, and then was feeling a little too good, feeling himself a little too much and stopped playing within himself. And so, you know, if Jordan Love was playing this week, the thing to watch with him would be how does he take what happened in game one, build on it in a week, and then put it on the field in game two. It's the same thing with Kirk Bankert. You saw the good and the bad. How does he follow that up with game two? And so I think that's going to be very interesting. It, you know, you can't just shut down and play cautiously and not make plays. You got to make plays, but you've got to do that while being clean, while being smart and taking care of the football.
Bankert signed with the Packers back in May, so he has considerably less time in this offense than Jordan Love would. And granted, this is preseason. We're not seeing much of the Packers offense in these games. However, how much different is the Packers offense going to look this upcoming week than it did this past week with Love?
I don't think it'll be different. I think they're going to be run their same base concepts, maybe try some different, add a little bit of motion or maybe move some guys around a little bit. But I think for the most part, this is like really just a basic scrimmage. And, you know, they're not going to, they just want to see if Kirk Bankert can move the team running their base plays. I think that's the most important thing. I think this guy is smart enough. My gut feeling is he's smart enough to handle whatever they throw at him because he had almost no reps leading into that preseason game. And he came out and he looked like he was running the show just fine. So, I
was stunned too, Spoon. I mean, we hadn't seen the guy all off season. I mean, ever since his tryout in May, we hadn't really seen the guy. He just comes out and zing, zing, zing. It's like, where did this come from? Like, it was stunning.
So it's really disappointing that Jordan Love won't be able to play in his second opportunity of a preseason game after being robbed of a preseason last year, thanks to the COVID-19 pandemic. And now this weekend, not looking so good for him and his availability. So what are the implications for him just waiting for so long to finally have an opportunity to play under the lights? And we got one half last week, not looking so good for this week. Who knows about this upcoming weekend?
You know, I'm not a good general manager and I'm an even worse doctor, but I would have considered playing him. Even so, if there's no danger of him really suffering a structural injury, if he's just got a strain and it's sore, the guy needs to play. He needs to play a lot, even if it's just another series or two and you throw him in there. I don't know. If you didn't think you were going to risk, you know, a rotator cuff injury or something like that, then I'm sure they're being very cautious, and LaFleur said they are, but I would have certainly considered it. If there were any way he could play, I would consider it.
You know, Tom, I asked Matt LaFleur at the beginning of the week that exact question, and the way I phrased it was, this is Jordan Love's window, because if all goes according to plan, after two more weeks, he's not taking another snap until 2022.
No.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers is taking all 17 games, so you're not seeing this guy again. This is his window, because Aaron Rodgers is not taking any preseason snaps. This is Jordan Love's season.
And what if you need him during the season too? Yeah. What if there is a game or two where you need him?
Well, to me, it's even bigger than that. Cause I feel like all this stuff that is happening, especially at the quarterback position, it's all pointing to the spring of 2022, and they're going to need as much. I think of it more as from the Packers standpoint than even Jordan Love, that they're going to need as much information as they can possibly get. Because they've got a massive decision looming in 2022. It's a crossroads, and maybe some of that will be taken out of their hands. Maybe they'll have no choice, regardless of the information at their disposal, to trade Aaron Rodgers anyway. But if you're going to hit that crossroads, if you're going to make the decision from a team standpoint, you want as much intel as you can possibly get, which means Jordan Love playing. And that's before you even take into consideration that this is his window and he needs the snaps to develop. That's just in addition to it. So I'm quite surprised. I'm right there with you, Spoon. I'm quite surprised that they're not. But the thing that Matt LaFleur said was that he would never jeopardize any player's long-term health or the future of his career. And we don't know exactly what the shoulder issue is with Jordan Love. It didn't look severe. It didn't look severe because he stayed in the game after it happened. I know he really handed off three times, but he stayed in the game. And after the game, Jordan Love was saying that he felt fine and that he fully expected to play come this weekend. That was completely in his mind. That was the plan. It seems like they're being abundantly cautious, but I just go back to Matt LaFleur saying they're not going to jeopardize a guy. And if that is the case, if it is, then you understand. But it is a big deal. It is a significant problem for him to miss a preseason game in this stretch, because this is his window. And if you're the Packers, you want to be able to make the best decision, have all the information you can get in a few months.
Didn't LaFleur say that Love threw a little bit on Tuesday or something?
He said that they tested him. They tested his arm and that they planned to do the same today. He was not asked if that was followed through today, this morning, but he threw a little bit. It's surprising. It's really surprising that they're going to sit him.
Yeah. Well, we'll see exactly. Gosh, these motorcycles. We will see how it all shakes out for Jordan Love in the coming days, if anything changes regarding Saturday, and if he is on the path toward full health come this upcoming week against the Bills, with the Bills Packers going on the road to Buffalo next weekend. Anything else we want to touch on, everyone, before we wrap things up for tonight?
Just, it's a 3:25 game, and I got to remember to get there. You know, I got to remember that it's not a 7 o'clock game. And
that's so weird.
All of our listeners.
The following week at Buffalo, it's a noon start. It's weird. It's so weird.
I'm in danger of missing the game because I just know I'm going to think it's at 7.
We're creatures of habit, Tom.
Definitely.
It will be that dream don't miss I have, it. The one where I'm coming from the press box and I can't find the locker room. And it's a perpetual, I'm walking in circles and it's my stress nightmare. And this one would be my stress nightmare that I forgot the time.
That would be bad. I would also be stressed, but hopefully none of that will happen. It won't happen.
I'm going to text you, Tom. I'm going to text you at like noon.
Please do.
Yes. Leave now.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, I expect to see you there, Tom. I'm looking forward to seeing you as well, Ryan. And we're looking forward to chatting with all of you directly after the game. We'll wrap things up Saturday night on the podcast, and we'll put a nice little bow on it before we pivot to Bills week and then the regular season. So lots of good stuff to look forward to. Make sure you're checking out PackersNews.com for all of your Packers coverage. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. For Tom and Ryan, I am Olivia, and we will chat with you next time.